You're listening to Eye on the Ball with Steve Rivera. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Hey, welcome back to the second hour of Eye on the Ball here on 1030 The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera. Here we are for the final hour of the week. Good show so far. Let's not mess this up. We had Salim Stoudemire in the first hour along with Jake Fisher. And now we have a friend of mine who calls in frequently, Pancho. How are you, Pancho?
Thanks for having me. Real pleasure to be here.
Welcome home. You grew up here, yes, and you went to school here. Now you're in California.
That's correct. I grew up on the east side of Tucson, graduated from Saguaro High School in 1981, did a lot of different things until I finally graduated from the U of A in 91 and taught and coached in Tucson until I moved to San Diego in 2000.
You are the perfect example of going to college for a long time.
Well, I left town. I did a lot of other things. I had a lot of different jobs. But my heart was with baseball, and I needed to get my degree to teach so I could coach baseball, and that's why I came back and finally got my degree and did what I wanted to
and
do.
You coached at Foothills?
I did. I was at Catalina Foothills from the first year the school was open until 99, but preceding that, I was actually at St. Gregory. But I want to make a comment about Jake Fisher's analysis of the U of A football quarterback first. I think he is...
He's spot on?
I think he's spot on.
Yeah.
I do.
It's something I didn't really think about, but I agree with him. Yeah, go ahead.
He mentioned that, you know, the thing is that Tate had two different kind of seasons. The first kind of season, he didn't have to play quarterback. He got to play athlete. Mm-hmm. And he just out-athleted those defenses for 4 weeks in a row. And then finally, they kind of caught on to him. And toward the end of the season, it wasn't so hot. The second year, being dinged and not being able to do it the same way he did his first year, he learned to play a different way. So he knows how to play. He's got two different years that are very much unlike each other. So I do think Jake is right on. And he's gonna be... something special to watch. I don't think you can have a great team without a great quarterback. And, you know, even to have a good team, you've got to have a pretty good quarterback. So I think they have that, and I think he'll be a good leader, and I agree with Jake. I don't agree with him on the 18 points, though.
I don't either.
I think the game, he's right, the first half is going to be close. Hawaii is going to be fired up. They did have a good year last year. They mm-hmm. have a quarterback who's a leader coming back. So that could be tough for Arizona. I think it'll be less than 11. I've decided there's no way I would take those 11 points. However, if you're out there, you've got about 24 hours left to put money on the 6.5 and go over, because I do believe they're going to win at least 7 games.
See, and I don't think that. You and I have debated it for months now, and I just don't see it. But although the schedule now, if they lose a game in this early part of the schedule, it's over.
They got to go 3-0. They have to win all three non-conference games. No question.
And if they go 4-0, your chances look better.
Yep.
And that fourth would be Colorado. Was that
Colorado
right?
at Boulder.
And they're better. I think on paper, they're better than Colorado.
They should be. I'm surprised. The over-under for wins this year for Colorado is 3.5.
Yeah.
I mean, and their schedule is tough. They have a lot of tough games. I looked at it, and maybe they're thinking Arizona might be one of those, you know, 3 or 4 wins. But we'll see. That's a big one. And then UCLA, you never mm-hmm. know what's going to happen
you
with
don't.
UCLA.
You don't. And typically, it's not good. You know, historically, hasn't been good.
Well, it's usually close, but UCLA seems to have beaten up on us a little too much.
Right. Well, they had them on the ropes last year. I think was it with Rich Rod?
Yep.
With Rhett.
31-30, tough loss. They were really close to having a pretty good season last year. I mean, the fourth quarter against ASU mm-hmm. was abysmal. That was an abomination. That just doesn't happen. And how that happened, I don't think you really have to give ASU too much credit for that. I think everybody that was in the stadium or was watching it on TV, it looked like Arizona took their foot off the gas.
And you can't play that way.
And wow, what that was unbelievable. And even then, the guy misses the kick. I mean, that was really close to being 6-6 in a bowl game and three extra weeks of practice. You know, the program would have really benefited from that win, but they had some close games. The BYU game, the opener was tough. They just got out-coached in the second half. Remember the adjustments that BYU made? They just played power football the whole second half, and Arizona could not cover a tight end that was wide open over the middle of the field the entire second half. The guy ended up scoring, I think, 2 touchdowns or whatever it was, and it was like, oh, no. And then we saw what happened at Houston. I don't think we're expecting either of those things to happen as fans, but I think they'll be better this year, and I do believe that they're
right.
Gonna get there.
The worst thing was the ASU game because it was in your hand. It was in your hand. In fact, I ran into an administrator right before the fourth quarter, I think it was, or maybe just minutes into it, and told them, well, if they continue to play this way for the rest of the Sumlin situation, they're going to be very good. And he acknowledged me, and he said yes, and it looks like that's where they're headed. And then, poop happened.
Oh, gosh.
Can I ask you guys a question?
Sure, sure.
Jake said he thought they were going to have trouble in the first half. The Wildcats might be they're going to be struggling in the first half, and they're going to have to win it in the second half and maybe pull it out late.
I don't disagree with that. I don't know if Pancho will agree, but it's kind of like in our world, Pancho, I think it's more of one of those gimmick games. Tell me the games in gambling parlance is where you look ahead to other games, but you don't pay attention to this game. God, tell me what it is.
Futures. No, I don't know.
It's just one of those games that you overlook. And not that they're overlooking it, but this is why. You're in a different setting.
Trap game.
A trap game. That's the word I'm looking for. A trap game. Luckily, this is the first game. So you're not being trapped. If you're trapped, you're trapping yourself.
No.
Does that make sense?
That's the thing that surprised me so much about BYU last year. It looked like we were going to be able to win that football game, but then it was pure coaching adjustments. BYU did something that Arizona could not counter in the second half. Could not stop it.
By saying this, and we can transition to your situation, but that happened a few times on Sumlin. And this is a tough question for a civilian.
Over the course of his career,
Yeah, is he a good coach? And I know this is a tough question to ask you, although you're just a civilian, you're not one of us guys. But is it a fair question?
Oh, of course it's a fair question. I mean, that you have to ask that question. Is he a good coach? And time will tell. You said something earlier, I heard you, that Arizona's like a step-up job.
Yes.
He's been at Texas A&M, though. You don't get much better than Texas A&M in terms of history. You know, you're right there in the middle of Football Central in Texas and the best conference in football. So for him to have left that job or been asked to leave that job with a nice handsome payout, by the way. I mean, he's set right now. He's secure. He's got a decent contract here at Arizona.
I wish I had his future.
Well, yeah, of course. But apparently he loves Tucson. There's nothing to not like about Tucson, really.
So you're going to answer my question?
Well, he could do a Larry Smith and end up at USC, you know, or Oregon if he's going to leave Arizona. But if he's going to leave Arizona for a step up situation, where's he going to go? He's already been up there. So I think he hunkers down here. I think he, you know, circles the wagons and stays put here and tries to prove that. And you know, think about the opportunity to become the first football coach at Arizona to go to the Rose Bowl. You know, I mean, that means something. It really does, Steve.
What's in that water over there? What's in that water?
It's that good old 70s Eastside Tucson water, baby. That's what it is.
Rose Bowl, we're getting him a job at Oregon and USC. Win the opener, baby. We'll talk after.
I know, but you asked me, is he a good coach?
Well,
you know?
You didn't answer.
Well, that was part of my answer, is that we're going to find out, because I think he's going to stay put. And I don't think they're going to go chasing coaches for a while.
Well, in the BYU situation, Pancho, wouldn't that fall more on the defensive coordinator's shoulders?
Well, it all emanates from the top, Tom. If you're the head coach, you're not going to pass the buck to your defensive coordinator. You can't do that. And
yeah,
if you're going to do that, then you fire
him. That's the same defensive coordinator that was with the team the season before. Wouldn't he be relying on him more?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that question. All I know is there's a transition. It was the first game. You know, the communications on the sideline, the communications to the coaching staff upstairs. You know, I mean, who knows what happened, but it just didn't work. So that was strike one for me. I was like, wow, they've got out coached.
Right.
I mean, flat out got out coached.
Okay. And that was strike one?
The fourth quarter of the ASU game looks a little bit like strike two to me.
Okay.
And so it's like, you know, it's your first year, you can make mistakes. You're going to make a lot of mistakes. You're going to overlook things. I've never been a head college football coach. What do I know? But I have been an organizer, athletic director, head coach, ran programs. The smallest detail goes overlooked sometimes, and you got problems. The one thing that you can't communicate yet, you haven't learned how to communicate with your defensive coordinator yet, even though the guy's been there for however many years. How do you say to your defensive coordinator in the very first game at halftime and just after halftime, you have to be able to make that adjustment. Nobody saw that adjustment coming. I mean, if you go back and watch that, you have to give BYU a ton of credit. And that put Arizona behind the eight ball right there. They started to rally a little bit and they thought we were going to pull out of it with a win over UCLA. And that didn't, like, I mean, we're talking the same thing over and over again here, but we will see. And Tom, you know, earlier you said it's going to be the third year where you're going to be really be able to find out, but that may be even premature with yes. Grant Gunnell. When Gunnell becomes a sophomore, junior,
right,
then we'll really see.
No, I get it. You still didn't answer my question.
But he's got to get his players here, and then we'll find out.
When do you think Gunnell gets the starting job?
Well,
next season or the season after?
You can't. Yeah, of course.
Not this season. That's all I know right now.
No, next season, I said.
Yeah, next. Let's assume first. Well, I can't assume. I hate to assume.
I mean, if Khalil is gone next season.
It's his job. Of course, it's his job. But let's assume for a second that Khalil gets hurt. And I'm going to say, he's been hurt a lot in his career here. He'll play.
I think so.
He had no choice but
to
play.
Clemson won a national championship with a freshman quarterback.
Right.
And there's freshman quarterbacks all over the place that are starting right away.
And you, if you were an AD and you were a coach, when's the best time to win? Right now.
Well, anytime.
Right now. Not in the future. It's today.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on, if you're an AD, I'm sure you monitored your coaches.
I'll answer your question this way. I'm supportive of Kevin Sumlin until I'm not.
Oh, and good answer.
You know,
good answer.
So right now I'm all in with Kevin. I like his approach to the media. I like
you
it.
Do?
That I do.
How?
I really do. Because he's a little bit charming. And he makes himself a little bit accessible, but he doesn't say too much. I don't want to hear too much. I just want to see it.
Let me ask you something. And this is not a knock, but I guess it is. After every game, a coach should be asked. So how do you think the quarterback did? He doesn't answer that question. So you're a coach. You have a pitcher. How do you think your pitcher did? Well, I don't talk about that. I got to see the film. Doesn't make any sense to me. Does it make sense to you?
Well, to me, it doesn't matter.
What do you mean?
I don't care what they say after the game. I don't care what they
You're
say.
You're not writing the story.
Exactly. I'm looking at it as how is this team going to win? What kind of adjustment? They're not going to. Same thing we talked about on the phone with the uniforms. You know,
you don't play
any better or worse because of your uniform, right?
And
the team's not going to play any better or worse based on the press conference.
No.
It doesn't matter.
No.
It really doesn't. You have a job to do. I get it. The public wants to know, but at the same time, it doesn't impact the way the team plays.
No. If you get to pose it that way, you're correct. But I'm a selfish SOB, so I get it.
Yeah.
Because I want my story to be written.
Yeah, I hear you.
And you don't get it for two more days. I get the philosophy, and everybody has a philosophy, but you could say, well, you know, he played very well, you know, hit his marks, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's not difficult. You saw it.
Yeah.
I saw it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, hey, let's take a quick break before I throw punches with Poncho here. I know, this makes for good radio. I really like it. Do you have the YouTube on, Tom?
Yes.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Oh, good. It's pointed at the good-looking guy in front of me.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
you got my hidden camera. Smile. Oh, is this it right here?
Yeah, it should be live. It should be live, and then we'll have it in the archives,
okay.
too.
Great. Let's take a quick break. We get some makeup on Poncho. We'll be good.
Oh, boy.
10:30 The Voice.
Oh, boy.
Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 10:30 The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera. I have mixed emotions about this song. I'll Let It Fly because Poncho brought it in.
Yes, I did.
This is just for you.
That's
today.
A good 90s tune there. Love it.
I'm an 80s, 70s guy. But
I got an 80s song coming for you, too, though. So you'll be all right.
We'll figure it out here. Good to have you in.
Thank you.
Good to have you in. Do you miss, this is a dumb question because you're in San Diego. Do you miss this place? It's only 108 today.
I don't mind. Yesterday I went for a run with my shirt off, and today I went for a run with my shirt off at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Because,
I love it.
Because that's what you do.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Love the heat, but I don't want to live in it. I want to be able to come to it and then leave. But my wife and I will eventually, hopefully, have a place here in Tucson. And
I'll manage it. Yeah, you can just go. Oh, man, when you're not there, I'll stay there. Tell the boss.
You'll have to like dogs, I can tell you that.
Oh, never mind. So, and I say that because there's a lot of things that go on. You're still connected to some people here in town.
Oh, yeah.
You miss the sports, probably.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're more of a sports fan for teams here than over there?
Oh, Well, I love the Chargers. The Padres are my second favorite team behind the Dodgers. And I don't follow San Diego State. My son is a senior at USD. So we do follow the Toreros. And
really?
A good friend of mine's son was the goalie at USD, Michael DiRigo.
Yeah,
you remember
yeah.
Michael?
My son followed him in high school.
Yeah, yeah. So USD, my wife's father graduated from USD. So we're big USD supporters, but not so much with the Aztecs. The Aztecs are kind of like ASU to me. Mm-hmm. So anytime we get even close to them, I start cringing like,
they've been good to San Diego State. They've been good, lady, in football and basketball. Obviously, Fisher. And then Rocky Long.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. They've got a good thing going there. And and the baseball program beat Arizona last year. San Diego State beat Arizona last year.
Let's go to the phone lines. We have Jason Heisey on the line. Coach, how are you, Jason?
Good.
Good. Thanks for calling in. I know you have a connection to Mr. Poncho or Tony, as you know him.
He doesn't even know who Poncho is. He has no idea that I've been calling in a radio show from San Diego.
What the hell am I
call? Today's the Poncho reveal day, Jason. It's Coach Bathy is actually Poncho, and people don't realize that on the radio. But since nobody's listening anyway, it doesn't matter, right?
You know what? In my phone, I'm changing your content.
I did that a long time ago.
So, Jason, I heard something when I was listening to the show earlier that your daughter's game got lightninged out yesterday.
Yeah. First home game. We were there for about 3 hours. It was funny. The cell just stayed west and never really came across, and just kind of kept, you know, that five mile rule with lightning. You can't play for 30 minutes. So it was. It's just cool, though, man. I mean, I saw her just before they called the game, and, you know, I see her in Arizona uniform ready to run the field. Dude, it'll make you cry, I tell you.
Let me ask you, where did she go to high school? CDO as well?
CDO.
CDO, okay. So my son's played soccer at CDO, at least my youngest did. Why did she not play softball, or did she?
She never played softball. Never played softball. No, she was a she only played one season of soccer at CDO. She was a basketball player for 3 years.
So how did this end up becoming a college soccer player? That's amazing.
You know, the soccer thing is more built around a club than it is around high school.
Oh, sure.
So she would play club for 3 seasons, and then she would play basketball. She was a really good basketball. She was an all-city basketball player. And then the senior year, she committed when she was a freshman at CDO. She committed to U of A, so they kind of followed her for 3 years. And the last year, they asked her to play soccer instead of basketball. So she did.
Oh, wow. That's an interesting story. What position does she play?
She's a goalie.
Oh, okay. Goalie, like my son, my oldest son. Yeah, that's great.
And you know what? I was just listening to you guys. They just played USD. I was just out there at Torero Stadium.
I missed you. We were on vacation. That was such a bummer. Yeah. I didn't get to see you. I enjoyed my vacation, obviously. But man, I would have loved to see you and watch your daughter play.
Boy, what a beautiful campus! Unbelievable.
Oh yeah.
Holy cow.
So who did she play for, and what league did she play for in the club?
She played for I guess it's FC Tucson now.
Yes.
It used to be.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who was the coach?
She actually played for Dave Cosgrove for about 4 seasons. So she's got a great coach at TSA. And then she had some other really good coaches, too, that really helped her along.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It was a great.
No question. Dave's one of the best youth coaches in America.
One of the best coaches, period, in America. Dave Cosgrove can coach some soccer.
Yes, no question. My son's played 12 years in that league and went on to play college, so I get it. I totally get it. She must be a tall girl.
Yeah, she's like 5'10".
Yeah. To be a goalie, she must be quick, too. That's it. Congratulations. That's nice.
Yeah, I couldn't be prouder, man. I mean, when we first went in for the trip about 4 years ago, I thought we were just going to, like, visit the school, meet the coach. It was the full-on recruiting trip. Recruiting has changed so much in the 30 years since I was recruited. Like, who recruits 14-year-old kids?
Were you uncomfortable with that? Because back in our day, that never, ever happened. In fact, I had Kelly Pierce talk about that. They're signing, pros are signing 14-year-old kids now.
Well, I mean, as a parent, you're like, okay, we're going to give you a verbal commitment, but the question is, how do you know how she's going to develop for the next 3 years? I mean, as a coach who recruited players, player could dissolve in 6 months or 12 months. So the question that I kept telling Hope for 3 years, I said, Hope, you know, it's a promise. It's not a guarantee. You got to keep working every single day. And boy, let me tell you, she got after it. I couldn't be prouder of her.
Well, you know, Jason, Steve, this is one of the reasons I wanted Jason to call in. He just said to work every single day. And I'll give you a background about how Jason and I met each other. He played at Arizona, obviously, if anybody recognizes the name. He played baseball at Arizona, and we were both exercise and sports sciences majors. So we had classes together. The woman that he married, Faith, she was also a U of A student who had the same degree. We actually graduated together, and I ended up hiring her when I was at St. Gregory. And then in 94, Jason, now you pitched in the Cardinals organization for 3 years after you left Arizona, yeah. And then you had the option to have surgery on your elbow or not, and you chose not to, and you came back and got your master's degree and began your coaching career.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So that's how we met, and his first coaching job was working for me. And you know, here's this guy who's gone on. He's going to end up being the Hall of Fame, right?
After that long story, the only thing I concern myself is it took Pancho 10 years to graduate. But Coach, how long did it take you to graduate?
Well, I got 2 degrees in, I think, 7 years.
Oh, okay.
So it took me 7 years to get 2 degrees.
Yeah. Nice. Pancho was one of those Al Bundy guys who just, you know, I'll just stay in school and be cool.
Wow.
I got to tell you, I will tell you the one big takeaway that I learned from Tony with my time coaching with him, and before I even coached with him, when JJ was working with him, was how to take care of a baseball field. Coach Bathy can take care of a baseball field. That guy has the details. I learned a ton concerning how to drag a field, how to brush lips, how to put in baselines, when do you overseed, how much do you water. I mean, it was from a guy who just ran on the field and pitched and ran off. I didn't know any of that stuff. So it was a learning experience.
Well, I learned from my time with him, his attention to detail. And like today, he came in with a bunch of notes, and I'm thinking, you don't need notes with me. We're just going to talk. We don't need
He's
to go.
He's an author. Award-winning author.
I'm well aware of that. He tells me on every occurrence.
So, and then Jason, you were also on the 89.
Wait.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Let me tell you this. There are not many 40-year-old men that are going to go out and become a lifeguard in San Diego and cut the mustard. And Bathy did it. So that is mentally tough. That's physically tough. That's believing in your dream and getting it done.
Let me tell you something. Now you've gone from Pancho to Hasselhoff, Tony.
He has no idea, Jay. He has no idea about the Hasselhoff thing. Believe me. I don't even want to get into it, but you remember it. Holy mackerel.
You were going to say something.
Well, he played on the 89 team that won the Pac-10 championship. Yeah. You guys were ranked number one in the country with a whole litany of Hall of Fame type players, and you didn't get out of the regional. What was that like?
Well, you know, it was funny. My daughter was playing Long Beach State last night, and Long Beach State was the team that beat us in the regional. They actually, in 89, that year, we were ranked number one in the country. We lost 4 games to Long Beach State. We were 0-4. But to our defense, Dave Snow had just gone from Loyola Marymount to Long Beach State, and he basically took every JC stud in L.A. County and put them on the Long Beach State team as JC transfers. And they had big leaguers. They had Kyle Abbott. They had Krogan. They had some really good guys. And we just, you know, Abbott beat us, the left-hander, which was, you know, all of our big guys were left-hander, Kevin Long, Todd Devereaux. Zinter and Snow were better from the left side, so you could see Abbott beating us. But when we faced the right-hander Krogan in the championship, you know, I thought we had a really good shot. But that we came to the yard that day, and the wind was just gusting. You know that hot May wind in Arizona.
Oh yeah, the jet stream straight out. Everything you hit in the air goes over the fence.
But it was gusting in from right.
Oh wow.
I was like, this is not good today. And we said we were throwing Erickson. And we had Erickson out there. He was 18-2 at the time, and he was on short rest, though. But, man, oh, man, it was sad when that last out was recorded, I got to tell you.
Well, I do remember a good one, though, and this was in Tempe when you clinched the conference title in the last out. JJ fielded that ground ball at second and threw out to first, and you got to celebrate it on ASU's field. That must have been pretty sweet.
Yeah, that was unbelievable. You know, that group of players hadn't beat ASU in the fall or otherwise. The only game we had beat them in the 2 years previous was the Friday night game that season. Erickson beat them, and so we went up there and we had to win two out of three, and I think we were one game up on them, but they had the tiebreaker on us. And Scott goes CG the first game, which, you know, typical for him. But again, they wouldn't go down. I mean, I think we had a 5 or 6 run lead in the last inning, and there's two outs, and they string together 3 or 4 hits in a row, and all of a sudden, JJ makes a great play to his left, throws the guy out at first. We win game one, and then Lance Dixon, I got to tell you, that guy, one of the best pitchers that I have ever played with or been around, and if he wouldn't have been hurt, I guarantee you he'd have been a superstar big leaguer for a long time. He goes out against ASU game two, goes complete game and beats them to win the Pac-10, and I struck out the side in the eighth, hung tough in the ninth. Again, they made a run at us in the ninth inning. They let off a single home run to cut the lead, and then he got the next two guys, and then a little check swing ground ball to JJ, and we win it. And he's all teed up to win the Pac-10 Pitcher of the Week, and then we go out the next day, championship in hand, and Jim Richardson shuts him out 10-0, and he gets Pitcher of the Week.
Yeah, Richardson.
That 89 team, now that you talk about it, I arrived in 87, so that team was stacked.
Oh, yeah.
Stacked.
It's look at the big leaguers. I mean, there's big leaguers strewn all over that. Alan Zinter, JT Snow, Trevor Hoffman, Kevin Long, Damon Mayshore, Lance Dixon. I mean, Scott Erickson. It was... Yeah, I mean it's a bad way to say it, but I mean it's the best team never to go to Omaha.
I was just gonna say that because and we've seen many teams like that here in this town, basketball specifically, where you see all this talent and then just can't get over that hump.
Yeah, I mean, trust me, we didn't think it was going to end until the very last out. But you know, even to this day, I had the privilege of going to when Trevor got put in the Hall of Fame last year. Me and Jim Richardson went out and were present for him going in the Hall of Fame. It's just, you know, the relationships that you build, you know, in that impressionable time in your life, they never leave you.
Do you now that Tony talked about your injuries and stuff, do you have any regrets in what you did or what you didn't do when you got the injury?
No, you know, back then, I mean, I think it was like a 20th round pick, and you know, I was a 88 to 92 right hander, you know, 6 foot, I mean, a dime a dozen. Oh, I wouldn't even, you know, wouldn't even be on a roster.
You had a heavy ball though, dude. Your ball sunk. I caught that. It was not easy to catch.
I mean, it was a situation where, you know, you like Jim Richardson too. Jim Richardson was a tremendous pitcher. Lance Dixon, a tremendous pitcher. Of course, you believe that if you would have stayed healthy, that you would have at least tasted a little bit of the big leagues. But you never know. Guys that I played with. And I played in the minor leagues with and played against, and they made it to the major leagues. You know, the first couple of years when you're quote unquote retired and you're 24 years old, 25 years old, and you're watching TV and you're seeing guys on TV pitching, and you're like, I was better than that guy.
Right. No, no. Yeah, I get that. I totally get that.
Yeah, but you know what? You just never know. You just go out there and give your best attitude, best effort, and see what happens.
You coached high school at the high school level for a long time, had a lot of success. What makes a good high school player?
You know, it's attitude and effort, man. Because the talent level will take care of itself. It's what is a kid willing to do? What is he willing to sacrifice for? The motivation is the why. It's not what you're doing, it's why you're doing it. And when you know the thing I've learned over 25 years of coaching is you got to find that, and when you find that, you put that kid in the middle of the action and good things are going to happen. And I'm coaching at CDO right now, and the wonderful thing about that is there's a lot of them up there that have that
right.
And last year was just such a joy. I mean, you know, I hadn't coached for a year, and I really, you know, my daughters go to CDO when the job opened up. I knew Keith Francis. We play golf together, or we're part of the same golf club here at Oro Valley Country Club. And I would see him all the time. We'd talk. I would recruit some of his kids when I was at Pima. And, you know, that year off, we talked a little bit about me helping him out, but it just didn't work out. And then when the job came open, I thought for a minute, nah, maybe, you know. And then the more and more I kind of grew on me a little bit was, you know, coaching high school baseball was really fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was really fun because you could see kids exponentially improve. You know, you could really see a kid from the time he's 14 or 15 as a freshman to when he's 16, 17 or 18 really transform. And you could be part of that process. And I thought that going in, but after I did it for a year, I just had a really good time doing it. I really enjoyed it. And I'm really lucky to have the job.
Well, we haven't really talked about this ever. I met you up at Fleming's that one night with Andy, and we talked a little bit. But the difference between coaching junior college and high school, are you relieved to be back in high school, and do you feel like you can control the environment better at the high school than you could at Pima?
You know, the thing about Pima, and there are really good coaches in the junior college ranks. I mean, they're really good guys, great baseball guys, is it was really about assembling a team. I mean, you had to go and find talent, recruit talent, and assemble them, get them on campus, make sure they stayed eligible, make sure they stayed healthy, make sure they showed up. And that was really the test. And the coaching part of it, the instructional part of it, I mean, everybody in that league is a good coach. Everybody in that league knows baseball. Everybody in that league, that's the constant, is the baseball side of it. The thing that fluctuates was the talent. Mm-hmm. And in high school, it's developing. It's how many reps do you get today? How much better is your team getting each and every day? How can you control their mental approach? How can you, you know, make them give them little things that will help them over and over and over again? And, you know, we talk about getting 1% better every day, and in 100 days you're a different player. You can really see that in high school, and I really enjoy that. I mean, I'm not saying one over the other, because I really enjoy my time at Pima, but at this stage in my life, I really enjoy the high school thing. I probably enjoy it more than I did my last couple of years at Foothills, Tony.
Those last years at Foothills, those are always a doozy, right? Mine was certainly one.
let me ask.
Great teams. Just one of those things.
Let me ask you, so you coached a long time, obviously more than two decades. How have kids changed to be coached?
You know, I don't know how much kids have changed, but I know that people tolerate a lot more. The environments have changed. Maybe they've changed because people are scared or people are concerned. There's liability issues. There's all kinds of PC issues. If the environment doesn't change, the kids don't change. I mean, you got to control your environment. You got to control your instructional environment, your culture. And if you control the culture, the kids are the same they were in 1995 than they are today. I mean, it's just what are people tolerating and what are people allowing to happen? And unfortunately for me, I don't know any other way. So my culture and my environment, they don't change.
Yeah.
So is it tougher to coach these days than it was back in the day?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it's any more different today, at least for me, because I guess the one constant, and Tony can speak to this, is that I'm probably one of the most stubborn human beings on the earth, and I'm going to do it my way, and that's the way it's going to be. And if you don't like it, then we can always part ways.
Well, Jason was the first guy that really accurately verbalized something. I remember we were at Foothills beginning of the season, and we had a parent meeting. It was a mm-hmm. huge program at mm-hmm. the time. There was probably 45, 50 kids in there, right, Jason? We met in the auditorium, and Jason is preparing to speak to all the parents so they can understand. And this is early. This is 95, 96. These parents still weren't used to. I mean, you're in District 16. They were going to do an alternative sports program up there. They didn't want to have football. They were reluctant to do that. They had a lot of people up there that wanted to do different stuff. So it wasn't about the almighty W at the time. And it certainly wasn't about taking away a well-rounded experience for a student in replacing it with, we're going to win or die, basically. Okay. Yeah. And so he speaks to the parents in the meeting, and he asks, you know, what do you all do for a living, or blah, 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 for example, this, example, that, and you're a doctor, you're a surgeon, you're an eye surgeon, and you're doing surgery, and I'm not going to, in the middle of your procedure, tap on the glass and say, wait, hold on, you probably shouldn't do it that way, why don't you try it this way instead? I am a professional. this is what I have done my entire life. This is what I'm going to continue to do. This is what I pour my heart, my soul, my after hours into. Please do not question the way I run this program. If you want to speak with me, if you want to take me aside, then we can do that. But do not shout out or, you know, and he was very articulate and eloquent. And I kind of said it in the past, but he really set that apart for me, that that's what you have to do.
Makes total sense. And you took control of the audience right away. Like, did you fall asleep,
Jason?
No.
Wait, I think that was fantastic. It probably wasn't your first rodeo in dealing with that.
Well,
you put yourself out there when you did that, for sure.
I mean, you know, and then again, I was 25 years old,
right.
26 years old. And the thing that I had done is I had spent some time actually studying attribution theory and some stuff in my master's program, and had a minor in sports psychology. So I kind of felt confident about what I was saying. You know, I truly believe, and I still believe, that this is the first decision that these young kids make. It's the first real commitment that they're making, and you have to treat it unique. You have to treat it like it's such. And I took it very serious, and it was something that I probably, you know, the emotions behind how I did it back then were probably a little too volatile. But what I do today, I do the same way. I just don't do it with all of the hypertension and screaming. And
how was it received? How was it received?
Well, I will tell you this, and Tony can attest to this, that I really don't know how it was received, because one of my great talents is I'm very unapproachable.
Extremely. And intimidating looking and large and threatening, and it's like, no, I'm not going to question Jason Heise. Forget about it.
So you didn't need that speech.
Well, you know, what I always did with that is I just laid the groundwork. You know, I kind of put the gauntlet down, and I said, listen, this is who you're dealing with, and if you really want to step across the line, then we'll have a candid conversation. One of the things I used to say to everybody, and I still say it today, is don't ask me a question you don't want the real answer to.
Yeah, no, that's great.
Because if you're going to ask me about your son and why he's not playing, I'm going to tell you exactly why he's not playing, and I don't think you want to hear it.
Right. No, that's fantastic.
We used to be able to do that back in the day. I hope you still can now, but boy, it was one of the reasons why I kind of tapered myself off of the whole education thing. You know how I was, Jason. I would get way out there, and, you know, it just got to the point where I was getting a little too much feedback, third hand, you know, second hand feedback, and instead of coming to me directly, they were going to somebody else, and then it got back to me, and I'm like, no, you know, if you have a problem with the way I'm running this program, speak to me, please.
You know what, Tony? You know what's really helped is having teenage daughters and being a parent of a club sport athlete and being a parent of a high school athlete. And I almost feel like when I'm speaking now, and I'm saying the same things I've said over years, but I almost feel like I'm talking to parents more than I'm talking to the kids, because I can identify. I mean, I understand what the parent is thinking when their kid is sitting on the bench and they're not playing, and I can understand the anger and the angst they're feeling towards me, because there's been times my kids have been in similar situations and I've felt similar things.
Amen.
I get it. I understand it. But it doesn't change the facts. And if we can just function our life on facts and not feelings, I think life gets a lot simpler than dealing with constant emotions, dealing with how the wind is blowing, what somebody's thinking. You know, it's just unproductive. And I think that's what lends coaches to getting burnt out, is they get so concerned about things they can't control that they just say, I'd rather not do it. And for me, I try to live my life around things I can control, my attitude, my effort, given a second effort. And if I can do those three things in life, you know what? I can get up and look in the mirror and do it again tomorrow.
Right. I think your background in sports psychology kind of lends you to be an advantage over people when they think things through, because you were able to think things through that way.
Yeah. Some of the classes that I took with Dr. Williams and Boyd Baker and some of the great teachers at the University of Arizona, I still have books to this day sitting in my house, you know, big old thick. Back in the day, we actually had books. There were cool things called books. You actually went to a bookstore and you bought them. They were cool.
Yeah, and it cost about $150. Hey, Coach, thanks for joining us.
Back for five.
Thanks for joining us. This was a great conversation. Maybe you can come back on the show and we wax poetic and more psychological stuff.
Anything for Poncho.
That a boy. You know what? I may be even a better host than I am guest. Holy mackerel. What a good selection you are, Jason. You did a fantastic job.
Yeah, thanks, Coach. We appreciate it. And don't go too far. Don't go too far, Tony. Don't go too far with that. We'll take a break here now on 10:30. Thanks, Coach, again.
Thanks, Jason.
Yeah. Let's take a break here on 10:30, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball on 10:30, The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera, and yes, I am running with the devil and Poncho. Tony, as we all know. Thanks for coming in. That was a great interview. I like, you know how much I like sports psychology. It's like the best thing.
Jason's,
because you could be talented, but if you're not smart about it, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, Jason's probably the smartest athlete I ever knew.
Because he's
I loved coaching with him.
Because he was a forward thinker. What was this? What was the special?
Well, he was educated. He said something about facts, you know, and facts, not feelings, and that's how he approaches life. So I learned a lot. I'm a feelings guy. I am very emotionally driven. Jason is very emotionally driven as well. But as far as analytics and making sure he has all the facts before he makes a decision, he's right up there.
And you don't? Are you just more emotional?
No, I do. But I think the thing that made me a successful coach was that I could get the emotion. I was very good at motivating players and not accepting anything but their best. And you know, you hear these things and they're cliches often, and people will talk about them in general and out to the public or when they're, you know, they have a microphone in front of their face. But when you get in front of an athlete or a student and you say these things, you have to make sure they understand it clearly. And then you may have to change the words a little bit, but there is something in you that is better than you think. There really is.
And are you talking about the player?
I'm talking to the player right now.
Right.
When I'm looking at you.
Okay.
I'm saying there
I'm
is
the
something
player.
There.
Yeah, sure.
You know, you don't know it's there yet.
Right.
You have no idea. Nobody has ever challenged you like this before.
Right.
And you're gonna be better. Just wait and see.
Do kids want that?
All the kids I coached did, especially the kids at St. Gregory. We had to teach the infield fly rule, and I ended up being the coach of the year, and we played in the state championship game. So, I mean, these kids, they didn't know that they could be good, and I convinced them that they could be good, and I think any good coach knows how to do that. But Jason's right about coaching at the high school level. You get to see a change in 4 years.
Right.
You know,
right.
When you're a junior college or, you know, you – think about a Division I head coach. He has a lot of talent. He has to teach his system, and they have to get better. I mean,
right.
Jay Johnson has a task. He has to develop these guys. He's promising these Arizona baseball players that if they're going to come to Arizona, by the time they're a junior, they're going to be draftable, you know, and he's starting to put those numbers out there. So he is getting them better, but at the high school level, you have to convince people. You have to absolutely persuade them to try harder, and you can't yell it. You can't demand it. You have to convince them.
So let me ask you something then. I know you're not in the coaching business anymore, then why, if you enjoyed it so much, why are you no longer?
I found a better thing to do, you know, and it's just, it's what made me who I am. It's, you know, the pursuit of victory and the pursuit of excellence and the desire to be the very best is just something that I've always done. And I knew that I wasn't the best. I wasn't the biggest. I wasn't the fastest. I wasn't the strongest, not the most gifted or talented, but I knew that I could try harder than anybody else if I wanted to. And I knew that if I set my mind to it, I could get it, you know, and again, people, it's so crazy that, you know, being a stepfather now to a 24-year-old son who's been in my life now for 14 years, he hears some cliches, you know, and once in a while, I really, you know, try to explain to him in very rare occasions, because it's, you know, it's a different kind of role as a stepfather than as a father, you know, but with all the success I've had with convincing children and young athletes to be better than they can be, that, again, the cliche part people hear and then it turns them off. So you have to find a way to make it not a cliche and change the words so that they can personalize those words that come in. And how does that affect them? And it works. You just have to find a way to make it work.
Give me an example of cliche that does not.
Oh, well, you caught me off guard there. A cliche that does not. Well, I don't think any of them work if you just listen to them and you don't actually look into what they mean.
Old,
you know, the one, I don't know if this is a cliche, but I hadn't heard it until Dick Tomey passed, and one of the players came on and said it, but your actions speak so loudly that I can't hear what you say.
Right, right.
Now, that's the inverse of what you usually hear.
Right.
You usually hear it the other way, mm-hmm. you know? But your actions speak so loudly mm-hmm. that I can't hear what you say. And that can be a positive thing or mm-hmm. that can be a negative thing. Because if you're the one who's always talking, you know, and you're not doing, then, you know, all you hear is the words and you don't see the actions. But the actions should speak so loudly. And that's something that is kind of a cliche that... I don't know which cliches don't work. They don't work if you don't understand them.
Right, right. Well, like you say, that you're a pretty good host.
I would love to do this. Are you kidding me? My wife is so successful. She's so smart, and she's so good at what she does, and I work for her now, and our goal is to eventually, you know, be able to retire and do what we want to do, and this would be one of the things I would
love
to do.
Come aboard, baby. Come aboard. Sponsor the show.
Talking about sports,
Tony,
and athletics.
I'll take your sponsorship. We'll do a double team on this show and get the ratings up, and we'll move to New York and
San Diego. We'll move to San Diego. Come on.
Good choice.
Come
I
on,
hate New York. On. San Diego, I'm in. We can Del Mar, do shows from Del Mar. We're in.
Tell
the boss to move here for we're in.
Yeah, we
She can sponsor the show. Tom and I can live in the high. We'll go visit. Hey.
Yeah, I could just sit back here and push buttons and turn knobs, and you could co-host the show together.
That's fine. We can argue, make it a good, back and forth.
We haven't argued much, though. And
which is a shock.
Why should we?
Which is a shock because I rarely ever agree with what Pancho
said. Well, that's how this whole thing started. We were Facebook friends, and we kind of got close, you know, and we were communicating all the time about football, and there's a couple of things and I remember for sure.
You got 20 seconds,
oh,
son.
Darn it, I won't even go there then, I just told him I'm going to call in and be Pancho sometime, and he laughed, and sure enough I called in and said I was Pancho, and nobody knows that it's Tony Bathey, so if you weren't listening today, you won't know next time I call.
And nobody knows, and let me tell you, Tony, nobody cares.
Nobody's listening.
Hey, I'm already looking forward to the next time we've got Pancho / Tony on the show.
Yeah, we got to go here on 10:30 The Voice. Trusted local news. Thanks for coming in. I enjoyed it.
Oh, that was great.
Thanks for Coach Heisey coming in too. Yeah. Salim Stoudemire and Jake Fisher.